When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Well, we're happy to have on the show here at Heartland College Sports. I'm Pete Mundo. John Canzano, a guy who, of course, knows the Pac-12 incredibly well, formerly the Pac-12 incredibly well, as we have all this moving, shifting, changing in conference realignment. You can find him at his website, johncanzano.com. He, of course, is statewide radio host in Oregon as well on 750 The Game, joining us here on Heartland College Sports. If you are new to the show, make sure you are listening, of course, on the radio. We always appreciate our radio affiliates on the YouTube channel, the podcast as well. Subscribe, YouTube, iTunes, and Spotify. Well, John, let's get right to it. It's a new world for the Big 12. We've got these four new teams coming in, formerly of the Pac-12. How, from what you're hearing, how excited are these teams, these universities, for being in this conference? And how do you think it's culturally going to fit with these four schools in with the other 12?
Yeah, I think it's going to be weird for everybody, like across all conferences, where you're suddenly you're going to wake up and you're going to go, wait, where's Texas playing? Where is Oregon playing? Yeah, there's just a lot of new that's going on. And some of the novelty of that, I think, is really fun for fans and for the teams. But, you know, look, you're getting four programs coming into the Big 12 conference that I think all add tremendous value. Certainly, we can talk about Colorado and the spotlight that will be on them, win, lose, or draw, right? But Utah is an incredible brand. They have done everything right in their transition from the Mountain West to the Pac-12, now to the Big 12. They just have it lined up, and you know they've got their stuff together. And Kyle Whittingham has, you know, he told me just a couple of weeks ago, he said he has the most depth that he's ever had for any team. Cam Rising is a difference maker at that position at quarterback. If he stays healthy, you know, everyone is penciling them into the Big 12 title game. And I found it interesting that Whittingham isn't running from that. Like I said to him, like, how do you handle that? Is he going to be one of these coaches who goes, oh, we don't pay attention to it, we don't see it? No, he's saying, like, look, we expect to play for championships. We expect it. So yeah, if everyone else is talking about it, great. But yeah, we've got to get it done on the field. So I think Utah is going to add a program that could rattle around a little bit in the CFP. That would be great for the Big 12 to have Utah be Utah. It's the one thing that Kyle Whittingham and Utah have not accomplished. You know, they had sort of set goals to get to the Rose Bowl, to get to the playoff. He's told me, he said, we checked the Rose Bowl off, even though they didn't win those two Rose Bowls. But he says, we still haven't got to the CFP. And I'm kind of looking at him and his career trajectory, coach in waiting, Morgan Scully. And I'm thinking, gosh, if Utah wins this thing and wins the Big 12 and gets to the CFP, is that it for Kyle Whittingham? Does he kind of do what Nick Saban did and say, okay, I've done it, I've made the playoff in this last year, it's a good time to exit? We shall see. But Utah, certainly, you know, in a program that I think is going to strengthen the Big 12 in a way that the Big 12 needs. There's just a lot of teams in that conference. And you know it, Pete, that, you know, anybody can beat anybody. You need to have really good teams that play at the top of that conference. And I think Utah is going to be the best of them.
Yeah. How about the Arizona schools? I mean, I feel like these two teams or programs have been kind of sleeping giants. They've never maybe reached their potential. Arizona had a great year last year, but now without Jed Fish, we'll see what that looks like. What about those two programs? Is that how you perceive them? Are they kind of underachievers, for lack of a better word, or is there something else going on there?
Yeah, I think that's fair. And, you know, sleeping giant has been a thing that has been said about Arizona State for years. And, you know, they've got a great recruiting base. They, you know, have sunshine that they can sell all the time. They've got a huge alumni donor base in this world of NIL. They can do it a little differently. Like that Sun Angel Collective at ASU has, you know, is kind of pitching strength in numbers. You know, Oregon may have one phone call it can make to Phil Knight to, you know, get $10 million. Arizona State's got more alumni living in more places and more large markets than anybody, right? And so they have the ability to kind of go, hey, let's do this $50 at a time. So they're an interesting figure, an interesting school in this era of NIL. But let's talk about those two schools. Like, when it was announced that they were going to the Big 12 conference, I reached out and I talked to an administrator at one of those two Arizona schools who told me, hey, we're not going to have to play USC and Oregon and Washington. Now we'll have to worry about Kansas State and Kansas and Iowa State. And, you know, it's just a different animal. And I think that they are looking forward to not having to enter those games where they are at a significant disadvantage when it comes to resources and recruiting. And so I think that there was hope in both of those places that they can get better footing, better trajectory in the Big 12. And certainly in Arizona State's case, it's a rebuild. Kenny Dillingham inherited a program that was flatlining with Herm Edwards. And I love Dillingham. I think he's a great offensive mind. He's got a really tough schedule this season. But if you talk about getting that trajectory and what was the Pac-12 versus what is the Big 12, I just, you know, it's no knock. It's just, I think it's going to be an easier path back to legitimacy for Kenny Dillingham. He didn't have a quarterback last year. He's got Sam Levitt now, who the transfer, he's going to start at quarterback. He played a lot of last season, piecemealing it together, had a tight end at quarterback at one point, but they were really competitive in some big games. They played Washington right down to the end, just didn't have enough. So I look for them to be kind of a team that could potentially surprise a little bit and, you know, win some games they shouldn't win. I think their over-under number was somewhere around like 4.5, 3.5. I think that's too low. I think they could be a little higher even with a tough schedule. But keep an eye on Dillingham because I think his energy and his focus, the kids want to play for him. It's just kind of a fun program. It'll be interesting to see their rebuild in the Big 12 versus what, you know, what might have been in the Pac-12. Arizona, meanwhile, Brent Brennan has got it. I mean, like, I think he was really underrated as a coaching commodity at San Jose State. He mattered. He registered on, you know, the national radar to some extent. I know Oregon State interviewed him before deciding to hire Trent Bray, who they promoted from within. And I think had both of those guys just been out on the open market, I think Brennan would have probably got the job at Oregon State. But because Bray was there and Oregon State was worried about retention and the conference was splintering, you know, they went with the guy they knew. But Brennan is just a burst of energy. He ended up in a great situation. I think Arizona's got enough coming back that Brennan's going to know what to do with them. And they are a sneaky outlier pick to maybe disrupt and end up near the top of the Big 12 conference. And I just think that Brennan, it might take him 2 years, but look for him this year to win some games he shouldn't win as well. Like, I think, you know, they will all sort of enjoy the idea that there's no USC, no Washington, no Oregon. They're still going to have to deal with Utah, but I think this conference is, you know, the beauty of the Big 12 is that it's any given day, right? I mean, who shows up to play, who game plans, who's more focused, those teams are going to rise.
Mm-hmm.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Now, how about the two leftovers, Washington State and Oregon State? I mean, you obviously are in contact. You know that part of the world in college football as well as anybody. Are they salivating for a Big 12 invite? Are these four schools interested in bringing them in? What are those conversations like, if any?
Yeah, I think if the Big 12 invited Oregon State or Washington State and offered an invitation tomorrow, I think they'd both jump at it. You know, they want to be Power Four members. They fashion themselves Power Four members. They are funding their athletic departments like Power Four universities. Oregon State's president, I met with her last week. She said, you know, they're going to continue to fund. Like, they are going to fund like they are a Power Four, and they're waiting for an opportunity. Now, there's two things going on here. Like, there's no appetite, I don't think, with the Big 12's media partners to imminently invite Oregon State and Washington State. I think the timing of this just doesn't work. And unfortunately, they got caught in a consolidation situation where the media partners are just going, hey, we want to consolidate a little bit, and they get squeezed out. You know, it'd really be important for Oregon State and Washington State this season to not disappear, particularly Oregon State. you know, they've got a $95 million athletic department budget. They're still spending like a Power Five or a Power Four school, but they can't disappear. Even in a year where they've got a first-year head coach and they're playing this Mountain West Conference heavy schedule, Oregon State has to show up and Washington State has to show up on the CW every week, register a decent number, stay on the radar of those media companies, and look for an opportunity. But I think what they're trying to do right now is they're trying to just play the schedule, stay relevant, position themselves for the potential chaos, whether that's in the ACC or there's some future realignment in the Big 12. And then really beyond that, like, you know, in 2025, I won't be surprised if they play some ACC schools and some Big 12 schools in a scheduling partnership, and the CW as a network picks that up and sprinkles a little money over the Big 12 or the ACC. But beyond that, you know, they really have to either decide, are they going to reconstitute and expand their conference for 2026, or is there a place for them alongside the ACC or the Big 12 in 2026 and beyond? So it's really just two steps. And then we're all kind of looking at this ecosystem going, okay, there's going to be a super conference at some point. Does it come in 2028, 2030, 2031? All those media deals in the Big 12, SEC, ACC, Big 10 sort of come up in that window. When that happens, you know, is it going to be, you know, will it be like a 32-team conference? Will it be 48? I've heard 48 talked about because it's more inclusive and could have like a nice regional feel with four divisions. And if it is 48, Oregon State and Washington State feel like, hey, they belong in the top 48 if it's a top 48 situation. But, you know, what happens to Vanderbilt? What happens to, you know, Indiana and Purdue? What happens to, you know, Minnesota? I think these are all questions that in the next couple of years, you know, we're all going to start talking about, like, who belongs and who doesn't belong. And I'm looking at this college football season. Everyone's like, okay, it's great. We're playing games. This is fun. Back to football. Mm-hmm. Enough with the other stuff. But the truth is, this stuff matters in the big picture like never before. You have to win right now.
Do they have those two schools, Washington State and Oregon State, do they have somebody lobbying on their behalf in the Big 12 right now, or is there just not any relationship like that between the four corners and those two?
Yeah, the Oregon State's president told me that they have smart people working behind the scenes. So I'm inclined to believe that, yes, there are lobbyists involved. I think all the schools, you know, in the end, as we look back, all the schools were lobbying behind the scenes and then talking out both sides of their mouth as the realignment was going on. You could just see sort of which way the wind was blowing during all of that. But yeah, Oregon State, Washington State are absolutely talking to these conferences. They'd be irresponsible if they weren't behind the scenes. But I don't think there's any traction like now, like right now. I don't think we're going to hear, hey, the Big 12 has extended an invitation. No, I think it's a lot of let's pause here. Let's see how this college football season goes. Oh, by the way, what's happening with Florida State and Clemson? Because they will get out at some point. And when they do, what does that do to those other Power Two conferences? Like, is there strength in numbers? Do Brett Yormark and Jim Phillips come together? Do they decide, you know, no, but let's reconstitute in a different way? And I think Oregon State and Washington State are hoping for some chaos on that front because I think it benefits them. San Diego State may be sitting out there in Boise State as well going, yeah, a little bit of chaos would be good for us too.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, when you look back just on the crazy last couple of years in particular, how will history tell the story of George Kliavkov handling the Pac-12?
Yeah, I mean, it's a failure of leadership, no question. And a big piece of it is on him. I mean, he inherited it. It was his watch where USC and UCLA got away. That started the dominoes, of course, that started falling and all of the unrest and the media partners, you know, sort of back channeling and talking about consolidation. You don't lose those two schools and you still have a Pac-12 conference. And I know the Big 12 went through this several years ago where, it looked precarious. The Pac-12 fell victim to that. But I ultimately look at the presidents and chancellors. Again, failure of leadership. And I look at the former commissioner, Larry Scott. Failure of leadership. He had an opportunity to take, you know, could he have gotten Oklahoma, Oklahoma State? Could he have gotten Texas? Could he have sold that vision to his presidents? And I know the presidents, once upon a time when Oklahoma State was considered, said, oh no, academically not good enough. Well, look around. Like, you know, this realignment is not about your academics. It's about your football brand. It's about your market size. It's about your value to TV companies. And, you know, it is, it's essentially a street fight. And they got caught in that. Klyavkov was a tremendous overcorrection from Larry Scott and his management style. And I really have thought, done a lot of thinking about that. Like, how did Larry Scott's sort of self-serving, elitist leadership, the disconnect he had with his presidents and his campuses, now they correct that with a really collegial, nice, folksy commissioner who found himself in a gunfight and he wasn't armed. Like, you know, this was, you know, he was just, I think he was not prepared for what happened. And you know, the commissioners and the conferences and the presidents in the Big 12 that had been through this and saw that how competitive it was and how precarious it was were much more prepared to make decisions that based on their survival. And the Pac-12 presidents in the end, you know, they were all saying, hey, we're in, we're together. I heard that from 8 or 9 different presidents. We're together. We're in. We're not going anywhere. And then in the end, they ran for the hills.
Yeah, absolutely. John Canzano is joining us here on Heartland College Sports. So take me through then. I want to ask you and get your kind of expertise on this. Utah fans came in, a lot of bluster, kind of bothered Big 12 fans, it seems like, on social media. Now, there's been a reversal, of course. You know, we've met a bunch now on our website, through our platforms, and they've been great. But what should Big 12 fans expect from Utah fans based on some of the, you know, rocky start to the relationship that is perceived by some?
Well, those Utah fans are rabid. I mean, in the Pac-12, Rice-Eccles Stadium was not a place that anybody wanted to go and play a meaningful game. It's a blender. I mean, you walk into that experience. Oregon got ambushed there a couple of years ago. Mario Cristobal team that was very good just got punched in the mouth and run out of the stadium. A lot of emotion there. A lot of passion there. Clearly, the culture of Utah football extends and permeates to that fan base. And some may find that obnoxious. I know some Pac-12 fans at the time said, oh, gosh, those Utah fans coming in from the Mountain West, they don't really belong here. But you have to sort of embrace the idea that anytime you have a university that's got fans that care that much.
Yeah.
And I did this study on attendance prior to the pandemic. You know, attendance was dropping everywhere. The SEC was dropping in attendance. The Big Ten schools were having trouble, more trouble selling tickets than ever before. The Pac-12 was down. The Big 12 attendance was trending down all prior to the pandemic. And Utah, amid that, was adding seats to their stadium. And so, you know, everybody was blaming the competition from television and night games and, you know, oh, there's just sort of a stale feel to these matchups. It's not anymore with realignment. But I just found it interesting that amid all of that, Utah was like, we need 5,000 more seats and we have a waiting list for season tickets. So if you're a Big 12 fan, look at that fan base and know that you're not inheriting UCLA fans in the Big Ten, like the apathy of the Rose Bowl and the scene there when you kind of look at the stadium picture on a normal game day, it's kind of discouraging. You're inheriting a fan base that is going to be highly engaged, that is going to challenge the teams at the top half of that conference to spend more, to invest more, to be better in your NIL space. I always feel like iron sharpens iron, right? That saying that's out there. The Utah fans in that program, I think, are going to challenge Iowa State, Kansas State, Oklahoma State. They're going to challenge you to be better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I've been excited. I've been enjoying getting to know them, but it's been really interesting. Now, the Deion Sanders angle, having covered him for a year in the Pac-12, if you were following the Big 12, I know you're going to be doing some of that this year, but how does Deion Sanders fit into, let's say, Brett Yormark's vision for building this brand when he doesn't have the blue bloods, but he has probably the biggest star in college football as one of his head coaches?
Yeah. And I think it was evident when, you know, that signing bonus that the Big 12 offered Colorado to make them finally take that leap. Like, yeah, it was evident how much, you know, Brett Yormark coveted Colorado, had to have him, had to have something to show. Like, if he got nothing else in just Colorado, he would have been okay, right? Like, it was evident with that signing bonus that was in there that how much Colorado meant to the Big 12 conference. And, you know, regardless of what happens with Deion Sanders as a coach, and, you know, there's a drip of the faucet that's going on right now with Shadur and Shiloh's bankruptcy and the court proceedings and you know, all the troubles that are at Colorado and assistant coaches speaking out, former players, transfer players speaking out. There's just a faucet. There's a leaky faucet in the background that isn't going to stop. However it ends, whether it ends with, gosh, this is a great rebuild, and look, you know, they're winning 8 or 9 games a few years from now, or if it's a, you know, just like a flame out of great proportions. However it ends for Colorado, the Big 12 benefits from the halo of all that coverage and the spotlight. Everybody felt it in the Pac-12 last year. Colorado wasn't good on the field. You watched them down the stretch. They, you know, they lost to Oregon State. They lost to Oregon. They couldn't beat anybody down the stretch in the Pac-12. But they had, you know, Coach Prime out front. They had the cameras there. Anytime they played, there was a benefit to everybody who was on the field. Oregon benefited tremendously playing them in week 4, you know, beat the pants off them, embarrassed them on national TV. Dan Lanning in the locker room, you know, grandstanding with the vein out of, you know, sticking out of his neck. But it was this moment for Oregon that became like a big football game. I was in that stadium. That was a big game for Oregon. And anytime Colorado shows up, it's a big football game. Now, I happen to think they're going to struggle out of the gates. This, the way their schedule lines up, the early part of the schedule, it's not like a year ago. But keep an eye on it, because I think whether it is a struggle or it is a success, there's going to be cameras there, and the Big 12 wins because of that.
What do you think, in talking to people around Colorado, is a legitimate fair over-under on how many seasons this marriage works with Deion?
I think right now you have to look at that number as being 1, right? Over-under 1. Is it 1 more season? And it's always going to be 1 more season with Coach Prime. Because when his kids go off to the NFL and he doesn't have a kid playing in Colorado anymore, you know, he may just decide it's not worth the headache. I don't need the money. I can take a new job in the NFL. I can go to the SEC. I don't think he really loves being a head coach. I think he loves being Deion Sanders, and he happens to be the head coach of Colorado. He's got control over his kids' playing time and their situation. And I think he, as long as he continues to have fun, he stays there. But I think Colorado went into this relationship much in the same way that Texas Tech went into the relationship when it hired Bobby Knight, or Fresno State when it hired Jerry Tarkanian. You know, you're getting a coach who's going to bring you, you know, 60 minutes coming to your campus to do an expose, increased gift giving. People are going to open their books. Fresno State built a on-campus basketball arena because Tark was there. Texas Tech benefited from Bobby Knight. Like, this is a situation of Rick George at Colorado going, hey, I've hired several coaches. Hasn't worked out. He's probably headed to being fired. He had to do something. He pivoted to what he thought was the best solution. And what has he got out of that? He's got, you know, back-to-back seasons where season tickets are sold out. The gift giving is through the roof. The cameras are everywhere. Yeah, it comes with some peripheral challenges and that drip, drip, drip of the faucet in the background. But Colorado would make that deal in a heartbeat. I think Colorado knows this is a year-to-year thing with Coach Prime. I won't be surprised when his kids are gone if he leaves too. And I think Colorado would say, hey, we signed on for this.
Yeah, and then at least they have some legitimacy or a little more juice as a program to go find another coach, because there's no tree here. Once Deion's gone, right, you just kind of wipe the slate clean.
Yeah, and it happens. Like, you know, I was there when Tark was at Fresno State. I covered that. I covered Bobby Knight at Indiana. Like, these coaches, these high-profile coaches who can cause fan bases to just go into a frenzy are valuable. There are few and far between where you could have hired somebody who would come in and immediately season tickets are sold out. Because I don't think people know, like, Colorado's program was flatlined. It was done. There was no enthusiasm. They couldn't beat anybody. Fans didn't want to be a part of it. Their NIL collective was never going to get off the ground with just, you know, let's hire a young coach and build with them. That wasn't going to work for Colorado. So when they reached out and they found the, you know, an appetite for a mutual benefit there, they jumped on it. Now, all this news coverage we've seen in the last few months, and it's turned, hasn't it? Like, it's not all about the hype. There's a lot of negativity out there. If he goes 8-4, it's going to go away. And Colorado's going to be like, this is the greatest thing ever. If he goes 4-8, I expect it's going to get worse. And so, you know, I don't think there's a lot of in between here for Coach Prime. I mean, this is either going to be a spectacular rebuild or a spectacular flame out.
Yeah. Well, what about you, John Canzano? I mean, we touched on it a little bit before starting our conversation. You're going to cover what? Four conferences, more or less? Is that what you're looking at in and out, including parts of the Big 12?
Yeah, look, I have three daughters, okay? So, you know, I'm used to kind of having to kind of play whack-a-mole a little bit, but it's been really fun. I think, you know, I think we all know that it's a moving target.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if someone could tell me definitively, here's what it's going to look like, it's going to be a super conference, what I think it'd be really easy to map out coverage. But obviously, I'm based on the Pacific time zone. My focus will be on the teams mainly that are in the Pacific time zone, but I've got readers in Salt Lake City and in Boulder and in Phoenix and Tucson that are saying, hey, you're still going to cover us, right? And I'm absolutely going to cover these things and going to cover the Big 12, Stanford and Cal in the ACC. I'm curious to see how it will go for them. Like that's a sociology experiment really with those two academic schools going, academics matter still. And you're going to fly across the country to prove it. And then this Big Ten stuff is with Oregon and Washington and USC and UCLA is compelling. So I'll do it all. I tell my readers that I will go where the stories are. So I do have plans. Like I'm going to go tell me if this is a good idea or a bad idea. I'm going to go cover the Holy War for the first time. Kyle Whittingham said, you got to come out and see this thing. Great rivalry. So I'm going to go try, you know, I'm going to be in the press box for the Holy War and kind of get a feel for that rivalry and write all about it. So I'll be all over the place and I'm going to have fun, but it is a little bit scattered out there on the forefront of college athletics.
Yeah. So you'll be covering games at 9 o'clock your time in the morning snow. And then, you know, for us in Big 12 country and Central time zone, I can't wait for these four new teams, but I'm not going to lie. I have three daughters as well. And you know, they're 5 to 6 months. So 1 a.m. is really not my time anymore, and I'm really not looking forward to these late-night games, so we're going to need some advice on that in the Central time zone and how to stay up that late when we're starting at 11 a.m. and we're going basically probably 13, 14 hours.
Yeah, and the funny thing with those late-night games is there's weird stuff that happens. It's just they are weird games. I think, you know, the players sit around all day. They watch the other games, and then here comes this zany kind of wacky triple overtime game where there's a weird coaching decision that's made. And, you know, it just seemed that Pac-12 after dark now becomes, you know, kind of a Big 12 after dark thing. Mm-hmm. I think you'll have fun with it and it'll give you something. I'll tell you this, after the kids get to bed, it'll give you something where you go, oh yeah, there's a game still going on and you know, you catch it in the second half or whatnot.
Yeah, well, it's going to be fun, and we'll be following John Canzano. Does great work. Find him at johncanzano.com. Of course, if you're up in the Pacific Northwest, you're already following him. If you're a Pac-12, old Pac-12 fan, you know him well, but Big 12 fans should be checking him out as well, johncanzano.com. John, great stuff. Really appreciate you being here on the show.
Yeah, thank you. I'm a big fan of your work.
Thank you so much. And of course, we're Heartland College Sports. Subscribe, iTunes, Spotify, YouTube. We so appreciate you guys being here. The season is right around the corner, and we'll talk to you soon.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.